Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast.
Good morning. This is Tracy Hales with Right on Four Corners on KSJE 90.9 FM in Farmington, New Mexico, and 103.3 Durango, Colorado. Today I'm talking with Kathleen Rogers about her second place Zia Award winner, the Flying Cutterbucks. Kathleen is talking to us from North Texas. Her book is set in the fictitious town of Pardon, New Mexico. Good morning, Kathleen.
Good morning, Tracy.
Well, I want to tell you that I really enjoyed The Flying Cutterbucks.
Thank you so much for reading the book, and it's an honor when an interviewer has read the author's work.
Oh, yeah. I make it a point, too, so I know what I'm talking about. And congratulations on winning first runner-up for the New Mexico Presswoman's Zia Award for this.
Thank you. Oh my gosh, that means so much to me. It was such an honor, and that's where you and I met.
It is. I was so grateful. I got an award, and then I got to meet some great authors. It was a win-win.
And congratulations to you on your communication award.
Thank you. It's funny to get an award for something that's just fun to do.
Oh, well, that's wonderful. And, you know, your show, Right on Four Corners, really, I mean, that helps your listeners, and it helps all the authors who are lucky enough like me to get to be on your show.
Well, I certainly enjoy it. But let's get back to the Flying Cutterbucks. Before we go on, why don't you give the listeners a little synopsis of the book?
Okay, thank you. So, the Flying Cutterbucks, decades ago, Trudy, Georgia, and Aunt Star formed a code of silence to protect each other from an abusive man who terrorized their family. One act of solidarity long ago lives within steel. With the election of a president who brags about groping women without their consent, old wounds and deep secrets come alive again, forcing hard truths to be told and even harder truths to be left to the dead. On the outskirts of Pardon, New Mexico, Trudy returns to her mother, Jewel, to navigate an old house filled with haunting mementos of her father who went missing in action over North Vietnam. As she helps her mother sift through the memories and finally lay her father to rest, Trudy will do her own soul-searching to say goodbye to the dead and find her way along with the other women in her family and through the next election.
Yeah, there's so much there. I love the backdrop of the election and the former president. That's all done really well. But
thank you. It was scary.
Yes, definitely. But you did that really well. You put a family right there in the midst of that. But that wasn't the main theme. And what fascinates me, among other things about the book, is how it's actually, the heart of it is a backstory, is a flashback, not a flashback, but the backstory in times past. Yet in the present time, you switch back and forth between that seamlessly. And that's not an easy thing to do.
Oh, thank you. Well, you know, here's what I say, Tracy, and I'm kind of doing the same thing in my fifth novel that I'm trying to finish, a whole different story. But, you know, when I think of, like, novels like mine with a dual timeline or, you know, several timelines.
Right.
And I always try to orient the reader when they, you know, leave one chapter and start a next. But to me, it's like memories. Okay, you and I are sitting here right now, and if we think back over our whole life, our memories don't come in chronological order.
Right.
They're all over the place. One second we can be 4 years old.
Right.
And the next second we can be 16. We can be, oh, something that happened a week ago. And that's how I think when I sit down and write my novels, some things are in chronological order, but that's kind of my whole view of the world. And plus, I don't think in linear. I kind of think and talk in circles. So
right.
That's one thing about being a writer. I can kind of take all that chaos and put it into a frame. I call a novel like in a frame. It's
right.
Like a, you know, you put it in this framework.
Mm-hmm. It's really true. When we get to know somebody, we don't tell them our whole backstory, just first this happened, then this. But capturing it in print in a natural way like you've done isn't as easy. So I admire that.
Oh, thank you so much. That really means a great deal to me because writing is very hard. You know, most writers will say that.
Yes.
None of it comes out easy.
Right.
And I do whine a lot about the process, but it is the process, and it's messy.
So when you wrote this, did you outline it, or did you just go by the seat of your pants?
I kind of, like I do everything, I kind of wing it, go by the seat of my pants. I always, in a way, though, I kind of have the ending in mind.
Yes.
Now, for the Flying Cutterbucks, chapter 31 is actually the final chapter, but what I thought was finished was chapter 30, and then that's what I sent to my agent, and then once the publisher, Wyatt McKenzie, came on board, the publisher had such vision that I wrote a little opening of 2 paragraphs before chapter 1. We don't call it a prologue, it's just kind of this free-floating 2 paragraphs.
Right.
And then I wrote, I updated, I brought the story up to the eve of the 2020 election.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wrote one more chapter. The one thing I could not predict back then in late 2019 when I did that, you know, was the pandemic coming.
Right.
So
it still works.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And pardon New Mexico. Now, I know that it's fictitious, but I can almost tell you where it is.
Okay. Well, you know, go ahead if you want to say the, yeah.
No,
I'm
not going to
cool
give
with
it away.
It. Okay.
Let the readers figure
Let's
it out.
Let's say it's in the forgotten side of New
Right, right, exactly. Oh, great. Mm-hmm. Why don't you read a little bit from the Flying Cutterbucks for us?
Okay, Tracy, I would love to. And, you know, the reader, anybody that wants to read the book, they'll start from the beginning. But I'm going to pick a very brief passage in Chapter 2.
Okay.
And Chapter 2, Twirler Girl, October 1974. The powder blue VW Beetle sputters away, heading east into town. Trudy waves to her girlfriends, all 3 upperclassmen whose daddies are civilians. She clops up the long gravel driveway in her chalky white majorette boots, the tassel swinging with each step. Gray clouds droop overhead, and she breathes in the promises of an early snow. For once, she doesn't wriggle her nose at the smell of cow manure from the feedlot south of town. Her maxi coat flaps open, exposing her bare, creamy legs and skimpy uniform. The stretchy sequined material, the same shade of green as her daddy's eyes when they sparkle. So Trudy's mama always reminds her with a sigh of longing in her voice. Shifting her textbooks in the crook of her left arm, Trudy twirls a baton in her right hand. A few days shy of 15, she is aware that out of the 6 twirlers in the Pardon High School band, she is the least talented. But at 5 feet 9 inches with a slim but curvy figure, and a shiny mane of reddish blonde hair, she is assured by the band director, Mr. Enos, that her appearance more than makes up for her occasional fumble fingers. "Hey, Daddy, I only dropped my baton once during halftime," she sighs as if he is standing by the side of the driveway in his green flight suit, both hands planted on his narrow hips, his long bandy legs spread inches apart. "I'll never be as good as Mama, the way she twirled her way into beauty pageants. And we all know your youngest daughter, Georgia, got all the dance moves." Trudy does whatever it takes to keep him alive, even if it means talking into thin air. She approaches the territorial-style flat-roof dwelling her mama calls their adobe, but Trudy knows it's stucco. Halfway up the long lane, her gaze travels to the front door and the wooden sign her mama bought at the Bay thrift shop when they returned to New Mexico. "Mi casa es su casa. My house is your house," Trudy chants, switching back and forth between English and Spanish as she continues to twirl her baton. Aunt Star's Plymouth Valiant is parked under the double carport next to Mama's Chevy station wagon that hasn't moved in weeks. Daddy's 69 silver and black Camaro sits out back undercover in the dilapidated barn, waiting for him to return and fire up the engine and drive 90 to nothing on the Caliche roads outside of town, kicking up dust devils in his wake. Trudy reasons that if Daddy were here, he would brush a hand across his sandy-haired crew cut, then let her take the wheel and teach her how to drive a stick shift. Instead, she must rely on some gum-chewing coach who teaches driver's education at Pardon High. A fighter jet screams overhead at 500 feet on its final approach into the airbase a couple of miles to the southwest. Trudy pauses, filling the hole in her heart with the sound of thunder as she cranes her neck, gazing at the mighty warbird before it disappears out of sight into the setting sun, igniting the sky in tangerine and purple. "Daddy," she calls, knowing her voice is lost to a jet engine that drowns out her plea, knowing the sound will keep others from thinking she is losing her mind like her mama. Pushing open the side door under the carport with her right hip, she is expecting the savory aroma of chili bubbling on the stove and Aunt Star's crispy corn cakes browning in the cast iron skillet. Instead, Trudy's muscles go limp while her heart pumps like a fist in her throat. Her books scatter to the floor, but the baton, oh, her blessed baton, is still firmly in her grip.
Yeah, that sets that up really well.
Thank you.
So we have so many storylines. I mean, we have the past that and the secret, but we also have the story of Daddy.
Yes.
Shepherd Cutterbuck, the flyer pilot who went to Vietnam. So 1972 to 1974, pretty crucial years for these guys.
Yes. October 1972, Major Shep Cutterbuck went missing over Vietnam. The crash site not found. And then in 1974, we had this dark, dark thing happen in the kitchen at the Cutterbuck home, and that's the secret.
Right.
And I don't want to give away those spoilers.
Don't.
And then was another loss. Trudy's little brother, Bogey, is his nickname, and he passed away a few months into 1974, and then this dark thing happened shortly after that. The challenge was to create the present storyline and dip back into the past. And for me, I know so many people say, you know, you can't go back. Just keep moving forward. Don't look back. Oh, my gosh. I'm always looking back because when I look back, it helps me find out where I need to go.
I agree. So I like the way you've done that. And I love the way our main character keeps talking to her daddy and hearing him.
Oh, yes. Oh, thank you, Tracy. When that came to me, like, I didn't know, you know, when the way I write, I don't know everything when I sit down.
Right.
I stumble my way through. I worry a book together. I massage it. But the way she first communicates with him, she thinks she hears him through, like, pilot radio calls.
Right.
You know, and Trudy grew up, like, her dad was a fighter pilot, so even when he was home, and, you know, she was never, of course, in the cockpit with him,
mm-hmm.
Because it was a fighter jet, but fighter pilots, and I know because my husband was a fighter pilot, and I've been around that community a long time ago, they don't, like, take off their flight suit at the airbase and then become someone else when they're home. They are fighter pilots. So the way they talk, it's just part of it. And then say Trudy's parents would throw these squadron parties. Well, then you got all these pilots that get together, say on a Friday night,
mm-hmm.
and the wives maybe are on one side of the room, the pilots are on the patio. And what do fighter pilots do? They tell stories, and mm-hmm. they talk with their hands.
Right.
And so that's what I realized when I was coming up with that, is that Trudy would have overheard so many pilot stories, and she would have picked up on some of those things. And that's also how I introduced magical realism
mm-hmm, right.
into the Flying Cutterbugs, was through those pilot radio calls.
Right. I was just going to talk about magic realism.
Okay.
And
thank you. I love magical realism.
Yeah. But it's subtle. I mean, it's not, it doesn't take over the story. It comes in very realistically, which is not what magic really is, but it works. Yeah.
Yes. Thank you so much,
mm-hmm.
Tracy.
So you know a lot about fighter pilots through your personal life. I was wondering
yes.
about that and heard some of the stories.
Yes.
Now,
yes.
And when you talk about the 1970s, I swear you were in the back seat of my car as we cruised down the road. And
I love it.
Yes. The music and the our dresses and the cheerleader uniforms, just so good
yes.
there. Yes.
So, oh, thank you. It was fun to kind of go back, you know, and relive the 70s just through my characters.
Right. One thing I thought was interesting was, you know, Daddy had this really nice Camaro. And then
yes.
when our protagonist retires, what does she buy?
Yes.
Butter a Camaro.
Yeah. She buys, and of course, hers isn't, you know, a 69 Camaro, but I think in the store she gets a 2016.
Right.
But I have to tell you, so I got to test drive one at the dealership in my area. And, of course, the guy rode with me, and I went around the block. But here's why I'm glad I did that. Because I thought, well, I don't need to go, you know, test drive a Camaro. But I'm so glad I did, because it gave me, Trudy is a lot taller than I am.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's tall, long legs, and you got to kind of get down in the Camaro. You don't climb up, you scoot yourself in.
Uh-huh.
And that became the fun part of every time she got in there,
mm-hmm.
how she would get in, you know, kind of swing her legs over. And it even became a conversation in the story. I think it's in chapter 4 where her mama, Jewel, goes and Trudy's driving. And I show in one scene where Jewel's getting in the Camaro
mm-hmm.
and makes a comment about, you know, it's low to the ground.
Right. Your strong women characters are wonderful, with not only Mama Jewel, but Trudy, her sister Georgia, and Aunt Star is great.
Oh, thank you. put you on the spot. I don't know if you had a favorite. I have to tell you, I think my whole favorite character in the whole novel, I loved them all.
Yes.
Well, maybe not Cousin Bella,
right.
But
right.
I think Aunt Star, she's in some ways kind of the antagonist
yes.
to Trudy in the beginning
mm-hmm.
because of what Aunt Star has wants that secret to stay.
Right.
Just where, you know, a secret. But Aunt Star became my shero the farther I got in. And another character who's a strong woman is the family friend, Loopy
Boland, right.
who owns Loopy's Diner in town.
Right.
And she was a fun character to develop because I didn't want a stereotype.
Right.
I wanted someone who'd left there, went and got her education, mm-hmm. and then she came back. Out of family duty to a grandmother.
Right.
And she adds so much to the story. She almost, in many ways, it's Loopy and Aunt Star who helped Trudy kind of find her voice as an activist.
Right. Loopy mm-hmm. is quite the character. She got her degree from Yale, right?
Yes, from Yale.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then came back to this little town and does a great job running the restaurant, which becomes a gathering place for a lot of people and for a lot of stories to be told and characters to be realized there.
Oh, thank you. I just got goosebumps when you said that. because, you know, I didn't even know, you know, when I first started coming up with things,
mm-hmm.
how that would happen. And then now it just seems like the story has always been there for me.
Right.
Like I forget all the, it's just like having a baby. You forget all the pain, sort of. And,
right.
It all fades away. And then it's like, oh, well, that story always existed.
Right.
And Loopy was always there at the diner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she's the one, like you said, she and Aunt Star were behind this whole protest and demonstration.
Yes.
And the pussycat hats, love it.
Yes.
I've made some of those.
Yes. Did you?
Yes.
You made those for the march in, what,
yes.
2017?
Yep.
Wow.
You betcha.
So you're a knitter.
Yes, I am. And I
Well,
had,
then you know Aunt Star then.
I really related to her with yarn all mm-hmm. over the place and making hats. And I love that Jewel was always wearing one of Aunt Star's knitted caps.
Yes, and when, you know, because I write, I'm a wheel, Tracy. Like, when I revise, like, I roll along as I go. I go back, I tweak here, I tweak over here. I'm always back and forth in any novel I write. And that's what happened as I was developing Jewel's character. And then thinking ahead late mm-hmm. in the story, and I'm like, how to make it feel organic mm-hmm. to the story?
Right.
Like, don't just like, oh, all of a sudden, but wait, when we first meet Jewel, well, in chapter one, she's wearing a knit cap.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I loved that because I first went, like you said, this knit cap, I wonder what this means. And then we find out. It all ties together. Yeah. And I love that Aunt Star is always calling up. Everybody's always talking on the phone to Aunt Star.
Yes. And, you know, I worried about that. But I had somebody in the industry early on say, doesn't she ever go home? And I thought, you know, realistically, Aunt Star is 81
mm-hmm.
when the story opens. And Jewel is 79.
Mm-hmm.
And as we all get older, some of us don't travel as much.
Right.
You know, so it made sense to me that Aunt Star hasn't been back to Pardon in a while. Plus, she has her reason.
Yes, she does.
Why she doesn't really like to come back to Pardon.
Right.
But she loves her nieces.
And so there she is, always present through the phone conversations.
And it was fun to kind of make her, I hate to use that word crotchety, but.
Yeah.
But, oh, my God.
She
kind of comes across that way, but oh my gosh, she has her reasons and
yeah.
she's got a heart of gold.
She does.
I don't want to say too much about Star, but she's
right.
definitely, And in a way, Tracy, just the name Star, she was kind of like a guide, like a my North Star, if
right.
you will.
And there's a scene where Trudy and her sister meet, well, her sister, Georgia, lives near Aunt Star. So Trudy goes up there, and we see this whole background of the Hardy Girls, which you mentioned earlier.
Yes. Okay. So there are three chapters later in the book that take place in, you know, as you and I both know, in Las Vegas, New Mexico, which is a real town in the historic Las Vegas. And it was so, the way the story started coming to me, I had visited Las Vegas, New Mexico with my husband in May 2017. We stayed in the Plaza Hotel. And then we got a private tour over there at the old Harvey House there on the railroad tracks, the Castaneda, I always mispronounce it. And in real life, my grandmother, Olga Berg, which became Olga Berg Lamb, she was a Harvey girl there from 1928 to 30, and then she transferred to Boleyn.
Oh, wow.
But as I, in real life, as I walked through that Harvey House, and that's before the renovations were really underway, I went almost like more than one person. I was there as the granddaughter of Olga Berg. I was there as me now of, oh my gosh, I'm here. And then, and as the writer, and then I became Trudy. And Georgia and Aunt Star walking through that hotel, even though I hadn't written those chapters yet, Tracy, I thought I have to, I'm always for years been fascinated with the Harvey girls, but I'm not, I don't write historical fiction, maybe one day a bit, but I love to write contemporary and then add things.
Right.
And I thought, I've got to figure out how to incorporate Harvey girls into a contemporary story. And by setting that crucial scene, there's some things that the two sisters discuss when Aunt Star's downstairs and they're up in one of the rooms. It just added a lot of meaning for me. I could have set that scene anywhere.
Right.
But it helps me bring my characters alive.
Absolutely.
If I feel alive in this space.
Right. And you bring it alive to the readers.
Oh, and I'm so glad.
Georgia is costumed and acting out as one of the Harvey girls.
She's in her Harvey girl garb.
Yes, I love that.
That was fun.
I bet it was. It was fun to read.
Thank you so much.
Yes, I did enjoy this.
I want to thank you so much for coming up to me at the New Mexico Press Women Zia Book Award luncheon after the the announcement, and you introduced yourself. And gave me your business card, and then you reached out to me, right after I got home back here in Texas. And I'm so appreciative, Tracy. And then I would like to say, I may live in Texas, but my soul and my feet might be in Texas, but my spirit is in New Mexico. And I'm here because my husband retired from the airline. He flew for the military then. For the airlines, and my sons are in Texas, and my grandson. So.
I get all that. I do. I understand.
Yeah.
I should ask you this before we go. You said you're working on another one right now, another novel?
I am. I'm working on my fifth novel, and I don't want to give away the working title, but do you have a minute for me to read two lines?
Yes, please.
Okay, so my work in progress is another book set in eastern New Mexico. Set in a small town in eastern New Mexico where water and opportunity are as rare as a mermaid sighting, three sisters and two friends form a secret club and dream of the ocean, but betrayal and broken promises threaten to tear everyone apart, and friendships and family bonds are tested.
Oh, wow. That's a hook.
I'm hoping so, and I'm getting books in there and authors and public libraries and our beloved New Mexico.
Well, make sure you let me know when this comes out, and we'll talk about it.
Oh, Tracy, I will.
And that was Kathleen M. Rogers talking about her award-winning book, The Flying Cutterbucks. This is Tracy Hales with Right on Four Corners on KSJE 90.9 FM in Farmington, New Mexico.
Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.